Good morning. Today I will be talking about our work with the Espina study, which is a study in Ecuador that took place in a population where there is a substantial activity of the fresh cut flower industry. And so these results that I'll be presenting to you regarding pesticide exposure and neurobehavioral development is an effort between the University of Minnesota and Fundación Cimas del Ecuador, both of which I am a member of. And I have no disclosures. So this study received funding from NIOSH, NIH, and from sources within the University of Minnesota. And so the study of pesticide exposure and neurobehavioral development is pretty new. Probably within the last 10 years is where some of these observational studies in children have started. And within the last 5 years, more of the studies of the results have been published. And just a handful of these have actually had enough power to answer the question appropriately. And so the results, the results are divided into either prenatal exposures or postnatal exposures. And with prenatal exposures, there have been associations with decreased attention and ADHD-type behaviors, decreases in working memory and IQ, some more developmental delays, and pervasive developmental disorders. And we're looking at postnatal exposures now. Fewer studies. There are a couple of studies finding poor inhibitory control in ADHD, so similar to some of the prenatal, and decreased learning. And so most of these investigations are focused on cholinesterase inhibitors, and within those, particularly organophosphate pesticides, which are among the most commonly used pesticides in agriculture worldwide. And cholinesterase inhibitors, as their name says, is the mechanism of action, which is to inhibit acetylcholinesterase. And acetylcholinesterase is an enzyme that metabolizes acetylcholine. And we know that acetylcholine is probably the most important neurotransmitter in our bodies, and it has also been found to be very active, of course, in the central and peripheral nervous systems and have a very active role in brain development as well. So what was very concerning for us really were the small pesticide exposures. So we know that in certain populations, in this case agricultural populations, children may be exposed through secondary routes to pesticides in a very small amount. So either because they live close to, say, some agricultural plantation, there may be some drift from that. Or there have been a few studies finding that agricultural workers, introduce pesticides into their home, say, through their clothes and tools, or skin and hair if they haven't showered. So these secondary exposures are very small, as I was saying. It may last throughout the life of the child, say if they're living in these areas. And so it is very concerning because they may go undetected. The children may seem to be perfectly normal. I mean, they don't show any signs of intoxication. But there may be very small changes that over a long period of time would have some of the issues. So that's what we're really concerned with in the Espina study. And so the hypothesis here in the study I'm presenting today are acetylcholinesterase inhibitions. So once again, if you're exposed to organophosphates, your cholinesterase will decrease. So that's where we're measuring these decreases in cholinesterase activity if they're associated with neurobehavioral development. And particularly based on some of the literature, we wanted to focus on attention and inhibitory control. And also we went another step, finding whether cohabitation with a flower worker in this case, whether exposed to the children to enough pesticides to have neurobehavioral delays. And in a previous study, we found that flower worker children had lower cholinesterase levels compared to those children who do not live with a flower worker. And so this is the Espina study, which the translation in English is the study of secondary exposure to pesticides among infants, children, and adolescents. And Espina is, we like the acronym because it means thorn in Spanish, and so it fits pretty nicely with what we're doing with the flower industry. And so this took place in Ecuador, in the highlands of Ecuador, roughly at 9,000 feet, in the county of Pedro Moncayo. And here's a picture of the county. It's a very very nice county, actually. And here you can see the greenhouses. So the industry uses greenhouses for the flower production. And some of the most commonly used pesticides here in the flower industry in Ecuador are carbamates and organophosphates, which belong to the cholinesterase inhibitors, and some parathyroids as well, and fungicides. And so we examined in 2008 288 children between the ages of 4 and 9 years of age, and 56% of these lived with flower plantation workers, and the other 56 did not live within a flower plantation worker or did not have any known exposures or intoxications to pesticides. And then we also surveyed their family members, so for 151 adults, of which 36% of those were flower workers. So here's a picture of the county. The red stars, if you can see them, these red stars are the homes of the children in our study. So we sampled from the whole county. And here in green we have all the flower plantations, which are very densely concentrated in the western part. And this is actually one of the areas with the most production of flowers, probably worldwide. The Ecuadorian flowers are very sought after because in this area, because of the high altitude, you can grow flowers that have stems of 3 feet. And then the bulbs may be almost like tennis balls. So this is a very significant industry here. And so zooming in a little bit, you can see that the flower plantations are surrounding here the population. So this is the main urban area. So we examined children in 7 centrally located schools. In the summertime, just to ensure for a quiet environment for the neurobehavioral test, which was very important. And the examiners were unaware of exposure status. Acetylcholinesterase was measured using the EQM test mate system. And some of the issues with acetylcholinesterase is that there are no standards for children. So this test was designed for adults, to monitor workers. So before they were exposed to pesticides or started working in agriculture, they'd be measured. So there would be like a baseline unexposed level of cholinesterase. And then as they work and they're exposed to pesticides, they keep on measuring it. And depending on how much inhibition of the enzyme, then they may pull out the worker. And so our hypothesis in Espina were all these secondary exposures. So technically, we could not have a baseline exposure. So if they live in the county, they're probably exposed secondarily to pesticides. Or if the children lived with a flower plantation worker, in this case, 40% of children were born into families with flower plantation workers. And the moment they were brought into the home, then they were exposed. So instead, we decided to go with more of a dose-response relationship with acetylcholinesterase. And then in a previous study, we found that this was an adequate measurement, actually, in children as well, if we look at it this way, to assess secondary pesticide exposures. And this is the novel thing about this study. Most of the studies have been focusing on urinary metabolites, which can reflect very specifically to organophosphate exposures, but only within a few days prior to the measurement. The interesting thing about cholinesterase is that once it's inhibited, it may take up to 3 months for full recovery. So we have this longer period of potential exposure that, say, a measurement of acetylcholinesterase could be representing. And then what's also interesting is that acetylcholinesterase is an actual physiologic response. So we know that there has to be a sufficient amount of pesticide exposure for there to be a suppression of acetylcholinesterase. And so that's something that takes into account the child's ability to metabolize the pesticide. So, you know, whatever levels they have of, say, peroxynase or chlorpyrifos oxynase, etc. And then with the NEPC2 is what we use for the neurobehavioral assessment. We use the general assessment, which measures 13 subtests in the domains of attention and executive function, language, visuospatial processing, sensory motor, and memory and learning. And so for our results, kind of a long table here, but I'll just keep it very short. The mean age of our population was 6.6 years. As I was saying, 56% of the children lived with a flower plantation worker. Over here, we split up in the cholinesterase into tertiles, so the lowest tertile, the middle tertile, and the highest tertile. So we found this in a previous study that cholinesterase changes in children as they age. So we see that most children who were in the highest tertile of cholinesterase were older, had a higher age. And then also in another study we found that cohabitation was associated with suppressions of cholinesterase. So we see here that a greater proportion of those in the lowest tertile of cholinesterase were flour plantation workers. So then when analyzing, this is logistic regression now, analyzing cohabitation with a flour worker. So those who lived with a flour worker had a lower mean score of auditory attention. And the overall mean is 8.2. So here we see that there's a score difference of 1.01. The standard deviation is 3. So it's roughly a third of a standard deviation lower, the children who live with a flour plantation worker compared to those who didn't. And then the length of cohabitation. So every year of cohabitation, we also assessed it. So we found that every year of cohabitation was associated with a score decrease of 0.13. And this was of borderline non-significance or significance. So then we looked at these are results of linear regression now. We looked at cholinesterase activity and the scores. So this right here is attention and executive functioning domain score, which is a score of all the tests within the domain. The trends that we found overall is that the association was stronger in males. This one here is not fully statistically significant. It's almost borderline. But you can see really the association is more is direct for males and not really significant, or even the opposite for females. Then we're looking at auditory attention. We found a cubic association. It's not really, it's pretty flat actually if you look at it overall, but somewhere over 3.5 units per milliliter of cholinesterase we start finding an association. But then what we found very interesting here is with the inhibition trial. Now this is a test that measures inhibitory control. And inhibitory control is the ability of a child to inhibit, carry out an activity that the child may really want to do. So in this case, the example of a child going, say, to a candy shop and the ability of him to restrain himself from eating all the candy that he sees. So that's inhibitory control. And just to put it kind of in a clinical setting, inhibitory control is thought to be the main mechanism behind ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So we found that there was an overall association in all the children, but the association was mainly driven by males. So this was a significant association here. Now we're looking at logistic regression. Now we're looking at low values. The outcome are low values in neurobehavioral development. And a low score was a scale score lower than 6, which equates to roughly lower than the 9th percentile, and that's what NEPC2 considered to be a low value. And so the overall score of attention and executive functioning was associated, but the association was really present only among males. So we see that every standard deviation decrease of acetylcholinesterase was associated with an odds ratio of 2.94 of having a low score in the domain. And then also when looking at tertiles, so those in the lowest tertile had an odds ratio of 7.4 for having low scores. So it's pretty substantial what we found here. And all these are adjusted for age, gender, race, height for age, income, maternal education, flour worker cohabitation status, and hemoglobin concentration. Then when looking at the auditory attention and response set, this is also a test measuring auditory attention, a little more complex, and some inhibitory control as well. We found that there was an overall association. Here, those children who were in the lowest tertile had an odds ratio of 4.7 of having those scores there. When looking at an inhibitory, the inhibition trial, which is a more specific test of inhibitory control, there was a significant association overall, but it was really present in males. So we see here some of the more stronger associations of those children in the lowest tertile having an odds ratio of 9.4 of having a low value. With memory and learning, we found very similar trends, so associated overall, but the association really driven by males. So in conclusion, we found that cohabitation was associated with decreased auditory attention scores in the test, and that acetylcholinesterase was directly associated with auditory attention, But more importantly, there was this stronger association in males, so it seems to be that there is greater susceptibility among males. And so we found these associations to be really driven within the attention and executive functioning domain in the tests of response set and inhibition, which again are measures of complex attention and inhibitory control and long-term memory. So some previous studies, there have been a couple of studies in rats that came out about a decade ago, which they found that male rats exposed to chlorpyrifos, which is an organophosphate pesticide, they had lower scores on memory and locomotive activity compared to women, to female rats. And then a study that came out last year, and this is the Chamaco study, which is a study of Mexican-American children in California. They found that children who had measurements in urine, now these are metabolites of organophosphate pesticides, they were associated with attention problems and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in boys but not in girls. So this is yet a second study finding similar with similar findings in this. So once again, attention and inhibitory control are important, critical cognitive skills that affect learning and academic performance. And as I was saying earlier, these are the main skills that are affected in children with ADHD. So we're pointing at very similar directions with the previous study as well. So with this, I conclude my presentation. And these are results that, once again, reinforce the concept of protecting families from secondary pesticide exposures. And so now we're very interested in starting to find ways to reduce these and maybe start working on interventions. But thank you very much.